Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hao, as usual. Thanks for tuning in and week out. We have a guest today. He's taken his car all the way over from Ho Cham. I think it's about an hour and a half on the new expressway. For those of you wondering to go to Ho Cham or haven't been yet, check it out. It's really fast to get there now. Walt, thank you for making your weekly commute out to Saigon, Ho Chi Minh, to say hello to our audience today.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and talk to a friend.
Yeah. No, thank you so much, Walt. And, you know, we usually share the boardroom at the American Chamber of Commerce in Ho Chi Minh City. And I see our mutual interactions all the time. But today, I want to focus on your actual 24/7 job, which is CEO of the Grand Ho Cham. Taking inspiration from the graceful crane that embodies a spirit of freedom, joy, and adventurous exploration, the new emblem of the Grand Ho Cham positions this destination as District Happiness, a unique identity offering top-notch entertainment and travel experiences. Come to District Happiness, where you can be the best version of you. This is your place to be freedom. The Grand Ho Cham welcomes you to District Happiness. Why don't we just start with an intro? Like, what is the Grand Ho Cham? For those of you that don't know, Walt can share a little bit. And what do you do there exactly?
Yeah, sure. Grand Ho Cham is one of, if not the largest, integrated resort in all of Vietnam. Mm. Right now, we have close to 1,500 hotel rooms, which are made up from one tower being Intercontinental, one tower being branded Holiday Inn Resorts, and then we have Exora One, which is a combination of a condo hotel and some villas. But in addition to that, there's a golf course recently named not only the number one golf course in Vietnam, but the number one golf course in Southeast Asia. So we're very, very proud of that. And that kind of puts us on the map as well.
Awesome.
But we host conventions, and we're an event-driven property. So we try to have a lot of creative ideas, different mm-hmm. events, to try to cater to different people who have different interests.
Okay. It's been around for about a decade, maybe longer
yes.
now. So one of the more, I guess you could say, original developments. And I have to say, having lived here for almost a decade myself, it's one of the few that have been truly successful and have the longevity. And you guys are always refreshing, of course. Why don't we just start there, Walt? So my next question for you is everything from integrated resort model to the golf courses. Those are relatively new kind of concepts, largely speaking, in Vietnam. How have you guys managed to maintain that longevity while so many new developments are opening throughout Vietnam? Not just here in Ho Cham, where you guys are, but throughout the country. There's so many options.
Yes.
How do you maintain that innovation? And what are your thoughts about that concept in total, integrated resort? Is it thriving in Vietnam? Is it the future? We'll love to hear your thoughts, because I know a lot of our audience are developers and wondering the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I have to, start off by saying, yes, the property celebrated its 10th anniversary earlier this year. And you have to give credit for the developers, the original developers that put very strong bones in the joint, so to speak, and started it off. Now, as for the first few years of the operation, it was very challenging. I've been there for approximately a little more than 3.5 years currently. And I think for any successful project or resort, success comes from the right strategy, the right team, and the aggressive execution of that strategy. And I think previously, the strategy was a little bit wrong, and they didn't adopt the integrated resort philosophy. And I've been fortunate to be doing this for 30 years, started in the States, worked in the Philippines, South Africa, Argentina, Macau for 18 years before coming to Vietnam. So I have the experience to see what worked in these various other locations and brought that strategy and changed that strategy to Ho Tram. One part of the resort that I didn't mentioned was the casino. Mm. It's for foreigners only, foreign passport holders only, but that's a key element of the property because that in a big part drives the EBITDA of the property and allows us to invest in other aspects of the property, which is non-gaming focused, but creates an even better resort for holiday makers, for conventions, and things like that. And so it's a very synergistic effect on the property.
Let's talk about, you mentioned the initial strategy didn't fully embrace integrated resort. What do you mean by that? Can you be a bit more specific?
Because
for the audience that has seen the evolution of Grand Ho Cham, they probably know what you're talking about, but we'd love to hear what specifically changed in the last few years.
I would say, and I would characterize the earlier strategies of being a very nice beach resort, with a small casino attached to it for foreigners only.
Mm.
And a very, very nice golf course next to it. I think that was a wrong strategy.
Mm.
You know, I adopted the strategy found in Macau, that the driver is the center of the whole resort, is the foreigners only casino.
Mm.
And everything that happens around it, whether it's hospitality related, you know, golf related rooms, food and beverage, conventions, all center around supporting and bringing events to the property.
Mm.
So, for example, very recently we held a professional international boxing event, which I'm very proud of, sponsored by the World Boxing Organization. We had a title fight, and the focus of that fight was to market to our best casino players. But that being said, there's maybe 200 of those customers, but there's 300 people in the arena watching the event who are not casino customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very surprised and pleasantly surprised to say that VTV Cable partnered with a television station in China. And at one point in our program, we had 14 million people from China watching the boxing event, because there was a very famous Chinese boxer competing.
Mm.
So that's the kind of strategy that we take.
Mm.
We're an event-driven property. The proximity to Ho Tram is a good news, bad news story. It's good news because there's more than 10 million people in the Ho Chi Minh metropolis area. The bad news, it can be from 2 hours from Tao Dien, maybe even a little bit less, to 2.5 hours from Tan Son Nhat Airport.
Mm.
So when we're talking about bringing international arrivals in, that hurdle we have is that 2.5 hour drive from Tan Son Nhat to Ho Tram. When you compare it to arrival at even Hoi An Resort at Da Nang, when it's 40 minutes, Manila, where it might be 30 minutes to the resort, even Corona Casino in Fukuok, that's about a 40-hour car ride from the airport to the resort. So
mm.
they'll always have that advantage. So we need to give our, number one, give our international customers a reason to come to the resort,
mm-hmm.
and reasons for someone who lives in Ho Chi Minh to take that 2 hour drive to our resort, whether they're a gaming customer or a hospitality customer.
Well, let's talk about the future of like the geographical area. You mentioned 10 million people. That's a huge advantage. You don't have to be in an airplane. You don't have to wait in queues. You're pretty much there in 2 hours time. Now we have a new airport arriving soon, Long Tan. I think that'll cut the commute maybe half an hour for you guys.
Absolutely. Maybe even more. That will be a game changer. The combination of the new airport at Long Tan and the improvement of the road system between mm-hmm. Long Tan and Barrio Vangtao in general will certainly be a game changer, because then the time that travel will be similar to Da Nang, Fukuok,
right.
Manila, Singapore. So we're really looking forward to that as a big contributor to the future.
Yep.
Of the Grand Ho Tram.
So in 5 to 10 years time, let's say, well, you've been with the business for 3.5 years now. The next 3.5 years, how do you see the business evolving under your leadership? What is there to look forward to? Like, I know that you guys did a rebranding exercise recently, I believe. Maybe you can touch upon that, among other perhaps infrastructure changes and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll be here in 10 years, mm-hmm. but I can maybe see the future of 10 years from now. And, you know, it brings to mind reactions of living and working and assimilating into the culture of Vietnam.
Mm.
I compare Vietnam to China maybe 20 years ago in its very nascent stage, very early stage of its economic development. And I can sense the initiative of Vietnam, the youth, the creativity, the drive, the partnership between the government and the business community, which I believe is very strong. And sometimes I even think that the citizens of Vietnam themselves can't see the future of that because they're too ingrained in the day-to-day, mm-hmm. their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a very bright future for Vietnam. So again, the infrastructure is critical. The fact that our market in Ho Chi Minh is defensible. For example, if a foreigner in Ho Chi Minh wanted to go to a casino anywhere else, they're going to have to get on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to drive to the airport, get on that plane, fly, drive, et cetera, et cetera. There is no gaming operation closer to Ho Chi Minh than we are. So as long as we're the choice of our customers, then that's very defensible. If you're trying to fly in international customers, mm-hmm. even if you have a new airport at Long Tan, those customers still have many choices. They can fly to Singapore, mm-hmm. Macau, Las Vegas, Korea, Da Nang, Fukuok, but that's our closest market, and it's a defensible and critical. I've always observed that every successful casino operation on this planet in the history of casinos has as its primary market a local component. That's its primary component. What does that mean? Macau is Macau not because customers are flying in from Shanghai or Beijing. It's because Guangdong province has 100 million people to it. And Macau's the closest, gaming destination to it. Vegas is Vegas not because people fly in from Boston, Chicago, and New York. It's because it's a four-hour car ride from SoCal. So in that same sense, we benefit from Ho Chi Minh. And when that connectivity improves because of the infrastructure development, both airport and maybe the road system even having a bigger impact, that'll portend well for Grand Ho Tram.
So before I move into the property a bit, your team and how you run the property, I want to talk about the regional kind of factors at play that impact the gaming industry, these integrated resorts kind of thinking. So I want to touch upon the accessibility factor. Ho Chi Minh, 10 million people. Guangdong province, 100 million to Macau. But those are two technically different territories, so they can cross over. I think in China, people aren't allowed to gamble in
That's correct.
Mainland China, so Macau is a different territory. They can do that. Ho Chi Minh City, Ho Chi Minh, not really. So who are the foreigners that are coming today to Ho Chi Minh Integrated Resort? Are they the ones already in Ho Chi Minh? Are they double passport holders potentially? I don't know how that works.
That's a good question.
Or are they from abroad?
All of the above. Okay. All of the above. A primary market would be expats who live in Ho Chi Minh. They might be factory owners. They might be executive of large international companies. They could be dual passport holders, VIQ, as you will, who left Vietnam and then came back. And then on top of that, we do have teams that are located in Korea, and we have team that's located in Taiwan to attract gaming customers who they've developed relationships over time because those marketing teams have worked in places like Macau or Manila. There's many factors that paints the competitive landscape. You know, one of them we mentioned is accessibility, location. That might be the most important one, but also management and relationships. The gaming industry is built on relationships. So if I entertained someone during my 18 years in Macau, I have a good chance of drawing that customer to Ho Tram. I had one casino agent who I had originally met when I worked in the Philippines. He was from Malaysia. And when I worked in Argentina at Iguazu Falls, the famous waterfall system, he literally flew 40 hours from Malaysia to Iguazu Falls, Argentina, to support me in my operation. That's a pretty good indication, an anecdote of how relationships matter in this business.
So like tourism and gaming are actually very like tied at the hip in a way. Like people are motivated to try different gaming opportunities around the world. Maybe sport, maybe just traditional, for example. It's almost like the regular tourist going to see Big Ben or the mosque at Istanbul or something. It's a form of niche tourism that's actually quite large.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention that. And, as it brings to the point a couple of things. Number one, I was in the elevator at Grand Ho Tram about a month ago, and I shared an elevator with a Westerner who was going golfing at golf again. I said, "Where are you from?" He says, "I'm from Germany." And he goes, "Why are you here?" He goes, "Because I have a bucket list of the top 50 golf courses in the world, and my hobby is traveling and playing golf in the top 50 golf courses." I didn't even realize that was a thing, but obviously it is. So there's multiple market segments that you can attack them simultaneously. People would ask me, "Are we going after VIP business or are we going after the mass business? Yeah. Are we going after the mice business or some other, whatever?" And I say, we go after all markets simultaneously. And we have marketing teams that can focus on these various markets and focus 100% of the time on those folks. So that one team is in Korea, trying to bring Korean customers to the resort. We have folks in Ho Chi Minh City. They're trying to go after the convention business in Ho Chi Minh and bring them here.
I want to use this opportunity to help quantify a lot of these numbers because it all sounds great. Well, and I'm sure, I've been there a couple times myself. It's always fairly busy and has activity. It feels like a public activated space. I want to help quantify this, especially on the impact on the economy, because it sounds really great, but how many millions, if not more, dollars are being generated in tourism activity and visitors coming to Vietnam, or just even local consumer spending? You know, like out of a group of, let's say, 10 Vietnamese, maybe they have one foreigner friend who wants to go there because it has also gaming amenities. And, you know, the Vietnamese can't play, but they can do other things. That draws a lot of revenues in other ways. Could you help quantify this, maybe without disclosing your numbers, of course?
Yes.
For the whole country of Vietnam to know how important it could be from a tourism driver perspective, how interesting it could be in terms of advancing tourism goals potentially.
Yeah. Even? Well, when I speak about the benefits of gaming operation, and the cons of gaming operation, because you have to speak honestly with integrity about both. Mm. And on the positive side, I use the acronym JET, J-E-T. Mm-hmm. J, it creates jobs. Secondly, there's economic spinoff associated with the property. And T is the tax revenue that it creates. Now, the J has a jobs. You know, we employ over 2,000 people. I'm almost proud to say the low number of expats that we have working at Ho Tram. I think we have less than 30 out of 2,000 people. So I'm very proud of that. But the tax revenue right now is I think when you include VAT, gaming tax, things of that nature, I think it approaches $40 to $50 million a year, everything all in. That is a great point because, as I had mentioned, it's currently only foreign passport holders. Mm-hmm. But there's, as you know, in Phu Quoc at Corona, they have a pilot program that they're allowing Vietnamese citizens to gamble there and test it. And I think if it's a successful test, which will finish in about 2 years, they'll consider to expanding that pilot program to other properties.
Do you know anything about that pilot program, by any chance? Like the results thus far, has the industry shared any insights?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because to get to Phu Quoc, it's a good news, bad news. You know, the good news is there hasn't been a lot of negative social impact viewed in Phu Quoc. Mm. But that being said, you still have to fly there almost like a foreign destination.
It's been insulated.
So it hasn't been as successful as it might be. But there are big players that go there historically. I don't know currently what's happening there, but I know there's a few big Vietnamese players who have played there.
Yeah.
But the point I'd like to make is that if Ho Tram was included in this pilot program, the tax revenue generated would probably increase from $50 million to maybe $150 million U.S. dollars every single year. Mm. So, I'd be very proud to be able to turn over a check of $150 million to the province every single year. Just think of the healthcare systems, the road systems, the drug programs, things of that nature, environmental programs that could be funded by that extra tax revenue. And that gives me as a casino executive more positive feelings than anything else.
So I like the acronym JET. Do you have one for the cons?
I do. And it's MOS, M-O-S.
MOS.
Okay. Number one is moral issues. Mm. There are some folks that feel that all gambling is immoral. Mm. And if they have that view, I don't try to change their mind. I just ask them to be consistent in that position. So, for example, if casinos are bad, then church bingos are bad. Mm. Then lotteries are bad. Then sports betting is bad. Then poker is bad. But as long as if you want to maintain that position, I'll accept it and I respect that. Mm. Always organized crime. People concerned that there's too many gangsters in casinos. Mm. And I was being in this business for 30 years. You know, the casino industry is more highly regulated than just about anybody else, except maybe the Nuclear Regulatory Commissioners or somebody like that, because we record every customer walking in the door, we record every chip that's being purchased, we record every cash out when the player is done playing and he's cashing in his chips. We have 2,000 cameras at Ho Tram. Those cameras are being recorded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that information is being stored for 6 months. Mm. As per the requirement of Ministry of Finance. So it's very, very highly regulated. And I don't want to disappoint anybody, but they're not going to see Robert De Niro or Joe Pesci walking into the casino at Ho Tram. That's more in the movies than in real life. It's much more of a highly regulated business, you know, circulating around mathematics and fixed probability and good customer service. Mm-hmm. And then S is the social costs. You know, yes, there are some people on this planet that gamble too much. Yes, there are people who wreck their family lives by gambling too much. But I will say that there are many programs that try to minimize that impact, reduce that impact, and address that impact when it does occur. I always only half joke that I don't see a sign in front of McDonald's that says, don't eat here, it's unhealthy for you.
Right, right.
But I see plenty of signs in front of casinos saying, if you have a gaming problem, call this number. Mm-hmm. Or our staff that's actually trained to identify customers that might be gambling a little bit too much.
Right.
And I have no problem whatsoever telling a customer, I'm sorry, I'm looking after your interests, you can't gamble here anymore. And they threaten lawsuits, they threaten this, they threaten that, and they never follow through on that. And I'm most proud of doing that than anything else.
Mm. Yeah, fascinating insights. You know, it reminds me of a documentary I just watched about, we're both Americans, so we know this, Kraft cheese. So it started something like 100 years ago, and cheese 100 years ago was very historically difficult to enjoy because it got bad very quickly. Mm. You need to refrigerate it, etc. The shelf life was very low. But then the owner of Kraft started the single serve cheese, and the Kraft singles, I think they called it, or variations
sure.
of that.
Yes.
And that it created a whole industry for longer shelf life cheese. And it opened the door for affordable cheese too. Actually, the biggest buyer of cheese back in the day was the American Army, because he had the time and created a version of the cheese where the U.S. soldiers can going to Germany and Japan or the Pacific could enjoy it without having to rely on a shelf life of 2 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And that expanded in the 50s and 60s and 70s where homeowners, young people were rising, but they wanted to enjoy nicer things without breaking the bank. And it exploded. But as you can probably guess to my point, that cheese was also not very healthy for you. People started asking questions about the preservatives, about mm-hmm. the additives. Slowly it attacked away. And if you look at the revenue share of Kraft, it just like skyrocketed through the 1900s and then it collapsed in the last 10 years compared to the last century. And actually Warren Buffett, who's in the not majority, but very big shareholder of Kraft, he literally noted that precise example where consumer shifts and trends and even understanding changed, where people started to understand those things. I think, and thank you for sharing the gaming stuff. I don't know any of those things.
Yeah.
I see it from the outside. And yes, I see those signs and I know why it's regulated in a certain way. And in some ways I agree with it, in pretty much most ways actually. But with that said, there's always another page to consider. And I think the contributions to the economy, job creation, they're huge. And those things we don't really know.
Yeah, it's not, it's a question that every jurisdiction has to weigh with their own, from their own point of view, the pros versus the cons, and they decide, whether to legalize or regulate casinos or not. It's simply a matter of that. And I respect anybody's opinion or any jurisdiction's opinion that says it's that we shouldn't allow it.
Yeah. First is a recent rebranding. I know you guys have a new recent shift about appealing more to like younger people, perhaps in the Ho Chi Minh City area. Maybe you can touch upon the motivations behind that rebranding. Why? What about the old branding didn't really relate to your management team today? And what do you hope to achieve out of that?
Yeah, I think the big difference was that the historical branding involved a very luxurious perspective. And there's no question that Intercontinental, the old Grand, was very luxurious. But that's not what everyone wants, and maybe not what the young generation wants. And the property was fairly quiet over a few years before I got there. So we had to create our own excitement by creating all these events, the boxing event, the mixed martial art competitions, the beauty pageants. We hosted a part of Miss Universe Vietnam recently, fashion shows, VIP dinners, et cetera, et cetera. We have to create a reason for a customer to drive from 2 hours from Ho Chi Minh and come to our resort. We create, we installed, lobby musicians, live music at one of our new nightclubs. So we create our own excitement. And as part of that was we need to change the perception, the historical perception that historical customers may have had. And part of that was rebranding and focusing on a different perspective. And we chose the crane as a center of the new logo. Mm-hmm. And because of its historical presence in Vietnam, the Cham Loc mythological bird, that is a Vietnamese mythological bird, integration with the environment. So that was a combination of factors. But it's a matter of going after all markets simultaneously, which is synergistic because people, even if you're only a casino player, you don't want nobody wants to walk into an empty hotel lobby. Mm. Or if you're in a mice group attending a conference, you don't want to walk into an empty lobby through an empty lobby or stay in a hotel that's only 10% occupied. You want energy and life, and so that's why we created this impact on being very very event driven property. You know, I'm proud to say that next month we're actually having horse racing on the beach at Ho-Tram.
Okay.
You know, and I'm very excited to show that. It's something new, the first time I believe it's ever happened in Vietnam. So we have to be creative and aggressive in our execution of our marketing. You know, we go back to your questions concerning, you know, marketing and strategy. You know, even the best, most creative marketing only gets you that first purchase. After that, it's your customer service, your product, your branding, your management. That gets you your second and third visitations or purchases of that product. And so we have to make sure that we don't disappoint the customer when they walk in the door, or when they walk in the door after a two-hour car ride from Ho Chi Minh, they go, wow, they're here for the first time. We didn't realize that this existed.
Yeah.
Or we were at Ho Tram 8 years ago and it's changed dramatically. And that was the impetus of the change, is, you know, making a change.
All these new, let me step back a little bit. So in Vietnam, I recently read a report, it's 11 months into the year, and we've exceeded the goal set by the tourism board, or the government, I believe, about number of visitors coming to Vietnam. I think some groups are more than others. I think, for instance, the Koreans have come in mass, for sure. They've returned with a blomp, and they're very happy to be back in Vietnam. The Chinese customers have not. Yes. But we've seen also a surge in Indian travelers.
Yes.
There's a lot of new flights from New Delhi, from Mumbai, other places. How has the composition of, let's focus on international travelers for a second.
Yeah, that's a very
good
question.
How has that changed over the last, let's say, 12 months in unexpected ways? Let's highlight that first.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, like, I mean, well, a couple things. You know, to be successful with an international niche, so to speak. Let's talk about the Korean market in Chinese diaspora market in Ho Chi Minh. You have to become part of that culture. Mm. You have to, you know, assimilate into that culture. You know, in my international postings over my career, I've seen a lot of international executives that they live in their own bubble of expats, and they don't really become part of the community. And part of our success is us going and becoming part of the Korean community, the Korean Association, the Korean Chamber of Commerce, Korean golf tournaments, Chinese associations, you know, things of that nature. And that's been a big part of our success of trying to win one customer at a time. You know, I'm the CEO of a company, a large company with 1,500 hotel rooms, 2,000 staff. I want to win one customer at a time. Right now, about 40% of our business is from Korea. Korean customers, most of that are from Ho Chi Minh based executives, but we're also our boxing and MMA promotions are based in Seoul, Korea. So some very famous Korean fighters who used to fight in the UFC are now sending fighters to compete at Ho Tram. Mm. We do this about 38% of our businesses, the Chinese community, combination of mainland China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, etc. But as you point out, the Korean tourists have come back fairly strong. We're actually going after India the market as well for a number of reasons, very interesting reasons. The mainland Chinese market has not come back from a tourism standpoint, and I think that's part of their own economic challenges and real estate challenges in mainland China itself.
They don't have enough money.
Well, that's part of it. I think they, you know, it's interesting. I watched a very good interview with Foreign Affairs magazine, and their position is that there is money in China, but it's tied up in saving. And the biggest challenge that China faces is for the government to stimulate consumer demand and expenditures, as opposed to an investment-focused economy such as real estate, infrastructure, even manufacturing, which has been hurt a little bit through the decoupling process.
Well, let's go back to India. Sorry, I stopped you a little bit. You went back to Chinese tourism and then India. Share what, because that came out of nowhere. I think like the number of flights capacity must have 5X'd in the last 12 months. I don't know exactly, but We'd love to hear your insights from a
I mean, one just has to look at the Chinese economy, the growth of the population, and to see the in Macau, for example, I think India might be the second biggest part of their visitation besides, you know, China, you know, call Hong Kong, et cetera, like that. But Macau, they host the their version of the Academy Awards. I can't recall the name of it off the top of my head. Visitation exploded after that. So in Ho Tram, we've invited, 20 or so, tour agencies, golf agencies, things of that nature to take a look at our
from
our,
India.
India, yeah. India specifically, all from India. They flew over, we hosted them, had a great time, showed them what we had, and then hopefully we'll benefit from that as time goes on.
Okay.
But right now it's primarily it's Korea and again, I call it the Chinese diaspora, but India certainly will certainly be a strong part of that going forward.
Hmm. Have you opened an Indian restaurant at the resort yet?
I have not.
Jokes aside, I recently went to Da Nang, which is like the hot spot for Indian tourism right now. One big trend is the number of Indians who want to have their weddings over there. So these big resorts, integrated resorts, for example, are capable of hosting hundreds of people, if not thousands. And it's been an exploding business. Where actually some hotels are now advertising in like magazines and whatnot in India. A lot of the hotel managers will text me and be like, hey, how do you know an Indian chef? I'm like, you're asking the wrong person.
Yeah.
But in Da Nang too, I asked some of the local F&B operators, and the number one most opened cuisine type is actually Indian food now, because there's not enough to service the inbound traffic. So yeah. I think that's an interesting observation. I think Ho Chi Minh City, we haven't quite seen that. There's some staples in the city, of course, but extending all the way to the resorts like Ho Cham, just a side note, wanted to share that.
Yeah, no, I the two most important thing for attracting any ethnic group is language and food.
Mm.
You have to be able to serve the food that tourists come from, that they're familiar with,
yep.
And you have to have the language capability, both in signage and
yes.
and foreign language speaking host. That if you don't have that, it's going to be a tough pull. If I can share a short anecdote with you, early in my casino career, I was in my car driving to work. And I was listening to a report on National Public Radio in the U.S., and the subject matter of the report was the 10 things that children fear the most. And they went on, and the number one thing that children fear the most, according to this report, was being lost in a strange place. And I was thinking about this answer, and I was thinking about how that could relate to the casino industry, because if that's the number one thing that children fear the most, we're all grown-up children, that has to have an impact on us. And I was trying to figure out how it related to the casino industry. And I realized that if you walk into a resort and you're a Chinese-speaking or Korean-speaking, you don't see any Korean signs or Chinese signs. You can't find a host that speaks your language. If you're in a big casino like Las Vegas and you don't know where the restrooms are or the hotel elevator core is or the cages to cash out your chips, that can be very, very disconcerting. So I've always kept that in mind from a hospitality perspective to make sure we have that language in Ho Tram, Korean sign, and Chinese sign, and in a strong foreign language capability that we're constantly trying to improve.
On the topic of accessibility, let's say, you're touching upon the cultural points, the soft points. Let's talk about the hard points a little bit. Visas, for instance. I keep reading in the news, Vien Express and whatnot, or keep writing about it, that every week there seems to be an updated position on when visas will be made easier somehow through electronic, or it's extended from 15 days to 45 days, whatever it might be. What's your comment and take on that compared to Vietnam's position in the region, where a lot of countries are making it super easy now?
Yes.
Vietnam has reasons, I'm sure, for maintaining its strict kind of protocols around it. I'm sure some good reasons, of course. What's your take on that? And, assuming at some point down the line that it becomes easier to obtain, what are the potential benefits of that happening?
Well, Vietnam has improved their policy by going to a 90-day multi-entry visas for foreigners, at least for certain countries, and that has been a big improvement. I've had friends from China, from Macau, try to visit me before, and it was a one visit, single entry,
10 days. Or something.
Oh, yeah, it was very short. I can't remember the period of time. It was very short. Now it's improved. But we compete in a competitive landscape. I believe Thailand has no visas required for certain countries. I'm not sure if Vietnam is included in that. But so whatever Vietnam has, potential tourists are going to compare that to what's happening in Thailand. Mm. So I know there are a lot of issues. It's not easy to get visa policies eased. But I would suggest you should look at the competition and see what a place like Thailand is doing, or the Philippines, or other place, or Singapore, and try to be as competitive, if not beat them.
Well, I keep going back to it. I want to talk about your team a bit more. You mentioned 2,000 staff. It's enormous. What are the differences of leadership and management that you have to apply in an integrated resort that has so many different elements moving compared to your traditional resort? I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah. You may know, before I was in the hospitality, the casino industry, I was a pilot in the U.S. Marine Corps for 15 years. Okay. And I would say that, being an officer for 15 years, I learned more about leadership and running a business there than receiving an MBA from the University of Michigan, which I'm very proud of as well, in the 30 years of experience, actually doing it. So, leadership is leadership. A lot of times people define or look for leadership as if it's one single commodity, like it's red or blue or 15 or 20 or yes or no. But, the elements, there's probably 50 different elements of leadership, initiative, endurance, speaking truth to power, risk-taking, taking responsibility, leadership, things of that nature. So it's a combination. It's a plethora of different elements. And so at Ho Tram, and as I did at other places, I try to maintain the same elements that I learned and developed in the Marine Corps, taking care of your team. In the Marine Corps, there's a famous saying that says, officers eat last. Mm-hmm. Officers eat last. It's three words. What does that mean? It means you take care of your people before you take care of yourself. Mm. And people pick that up very rapidly. Mm. And I've seen in business that is not very common, that there are a lot of organizations I've worked in that people take care of themselves first instead of taking care of their team first. The sheepdog mentality.
What take does Vietnam in general have, would you say, at that small company, large company take, if we were to just zone in on Vietnam in particular?
I would say that, I don't think there's anything specific or unique about leadership or the lack of leadership in Vietnam that I didn't find in other places. I think it comes down to your background, your training, your experiences, things of that nature. Just on the leadership equation, I've tried to develop this myself along the lines that, like an equation where the combination of technical skills and experience leads to intuition, and the combination of intuition and risk-taking leads to good leadership, good business decisions. Mm. And so you need all, there's multiple steps in there, and without all of them, you can't maximize your leadership potential. I've also said that myself, that true wealth is valuing your life. You're using a currency that no one else is using. Mm. What does that mean? Most people value their life using a dollar symbol and see how much money they have in the bank.
Yeah.
Well, you can get wealthy in many, many ways. You can work hard and get it. You can be creative and get it. But you can also steal and get it. You can inherit it. You can get lucky. And I'd rather value my life in other ways and ways that have helped people become successful. Success in general, people think that success comes from initiative, creativity, hard work. I think that's a bunch of baloney. I think success comes from being lucky. And at some point in their lives, somebody reached out with a helping hand and gave you an assist. Mm. That's been the experience of my life. Mm. And at this point in my career, my objective is to have that helping hand reaching out and help people younger in their career and help them in their journey to become successful.
Well, very good. If you're a young person or an old person, and you'd like to work with Walt, or it sounds interesting, just find his contact on LinkedIn. Just leave a comment. I'm sure we'll share some more in the description, more about where to find out more about the Grand Ho Tram team. Walt, I always like to end my podcast with one question. Today, we have you on the show because you're an expert about what you do. if I want to know about hospitality and everything around it, you're definitely someone to look out for and ask those questions. On the flip side, there's things that you probably don't know. And so my question for you is, on this show, Vietnam Innovators, we like to have guests of all different types of backgrounds and industries to share about what they know. What kind of industry or person or leader would you like to hear from? You don't have to be specific. It could be an industry like AI, for instance, and whatnot, that you would like to know more about that we can deliver value for on this podcast.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm a curious guy. I'm a skeptic, and I believe in the scientific method. So I'd like to hear positions from functional areas I know nothing about. So AI would be one of them, because it's so much in the popular press. You saw just recently that the stock price of Microsoft went through the roof when they just hired a key AI executive.
Sam Altman.
Yep. Sam Altman. So that was very interesting.
Yep.
So that's something I don't know much about and would love to learn about. You know, the general answer is, I want to learn about anything I don't know anything about. I'm most curious about that. You can learn too much about something, and I you know, to be an expert in anything, you have to focus on that task, excluding everything else, if you really want to be the world leader in that particular subject. So I play chess fanatically, and I train jiu-jitsu, the martial art, fanatically, but I'm certainly not the world's expert on that, because I know that to become the world's expert at those exercises, you have to exclude everything else. And I'm a curious guy. So I want to have the perspective of an expert, but not be the expert, because I know, because I also want to do chess or military history or AI or mathematics or physics or astrophysics, things of that nature. So just, you know,
military history, is that one interest?
Military history is
that's another one of mine too. But
I studied that fanatically.
Might have to be on another podcast. So.
Yes, for sure. Yeah,
guys, thank you for tuning in for today's podcast. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on today's show and learning more about what you do, the industry at large, and just hearing about your thoughts about leadership and whatnot. You know, today's podcast could have been 2 hours, but we have to close it here. Thank you so much, Walt, and looking forward to having your next visit just down the road to Ho Chi Minh very soon.
Well, I'm impressed by your interview style. Joe Rogan, look out.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.